And then she'd be like, you need to have your nose in the air. And I'd be like, what do you mean? She'd be like, you know, nose in the air, a little bit snooty, a little bit more confident. When you're young, you kind of really don't see what other people see. Mm. And so it took a long time to build my confidence, but slowly that grew.
Hello and welcome back to Red Lips and High Kicks with me, Lydia Holt. Thank you for joining me this Wednesday. It is a miserable day here in Berlin, so I hope it's a little bit nicer where you are. If it's not, then this is just the place where you'll feel a little bit lighter and a little bit happier. Today, I talk to Isabella Maguire-Mays. Isabella is a London-based dancer and teacher, but trained in the Vagonova technique at the Vagonova School in Russia. She really is an unusual breed of dancer. Not many people would leave the Royal Ballet School to travel all the way to Russia by herself at a tender age to train and learn there. It really is amazing, and her story is show such bravery and courage from her, and I think we should all learn to be a little bit more like her, because she really just took control of her art and had the balls to know what was best for her. And I think it's really inspiring, and definitely we should all be a little bit more like Isabella. I'm so happy to bring you these podcasts every week, and especially at the moment, it's such a sad, you know, sometimes desperate world we live in, and finding these little moments of happiness and calm and serenity are so important. So for me, it's really important that I try offer that to people. I'm getting so into watching YouTube vlogs, and I'm really getting back into The Only Way is Essex, and I could not be more happy about it, because it's just that noise, it's just that warmth noise of hearing people talking, the lightness that I think is so important right now. It's so easy to turn your nose up at things like that, but it is such a desperate world we're living in, and those small moments of calmness and lightness can do a lot. So please, I really hope you tune into this podcast to feel a little bit calmer, to feel a little bit lighter. And if this is definitely is the episode for you, because Isabella is so calm. Even me, I talk a million miles an hour, and I found myself talking slow, and I've got to really thank her for that. I want every interview for me to be that collective and together. I love it. So I really hope and endeavor to try be a bit more like Isabella. That's the official theme of today. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can find us on Instagram at redlips.highkicks. And of course, give us a subscribe and a comment and a rating below. It would be marvelous. Go do it now, please, while I'm talking. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Have a great day. Stay excellent. Hello, Isabella. It is great to have you on the podcast today. How are you getting on?
Hi, Lydia. I'm good. I'm just, sat in my bedroom chilling out after a long day.
No, it's good. I see you're always so busy teaching in and about London, and I really respect that kind of London hustle that everyone has to have to kind of keep up in that city.
Yeah, absolutely. I get up kind of at the crack of dawn and go to bed when the light goes, and everyone's kind of like, well, my flatmate's always like, where do you get your energy from? And I'm honestly like, I don't know. Probably caffeine, but I don't know.
Probably caffeine, yeah, that magic juice. So my first question, and one I think everyone has got a very interesting and unique answer for, is what has this year taught you?
Well, I guess, and this is probably a common one with a lot of people, it's taught me or reiterated the fact that I can adapt to kind of any situation, and that that is a really kind of useful skill to be able to have. Because I do find this whole experience has probably been harder on people who have a much more sort of 9-to-5 way of life, whether that's in an office or even a company scenario where you're told to be somewhere at a certain point, you know, at a certain time of day, and you're given a timetable. Whereas I've been a freelancer for like a few years now. And when you first start that, it's very much like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to run my own life. And then I feel like this experience has kind of reiterated the fact that I just am a bit of a, I've learned I'm definitely a doer, and you can make any situation into something. Just because, you know, you're in your house all the time, it's not wasted time. It's time to discover yourself, you know, what you really want in life, and what you're good at. And it taught me I could adapt. It also taught me to be okay with being alone quite often. Yeah. And it taught me to be okay with not talking or seeing my friends as often. And it taught me to be okay with that, because
It's so interesting. And I remember reading a quote at the beginning of it, and it was like, life is really made up of the things that you don't see coming. Like, you fret so hard about the things that you like might happen, the things that are actually like in your perceivable future, but actually it's the stuff that you don't see coming that like really knocks you. And actually this, no one saw this coming, and everyone, like you said, has had to adapt and kind of find that new normal, and coming out of it now the other side, it's like, right, do I, what's the new normal now? Is it the same as before? Like, do I take a little bit of what I've been doing for the last 6 months? Like, how do we kind of reconfigure to this landscape?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it almost begs the question of what even is normal, or what is considered normal. Like, is there a normal? I don't even know if there is one. Like, everyone's normal is going to be different, you know. And I guess, again, this scenario has kind of taught that. And I think it's definitely taught everyone to be much more go with the flow. And, you know, I did used to be a bit of a control freak when I was younger. Like, if things where it didn't go the way I wanted them, I used to really freak out and just worry about it so much. Whereas definitely this experience, and also just being more freelance now, it's much more just like, you know, you can't control a lot of life and a lot of situations, so you just have to be okay with it.
Yeah, roll with the punches. So your introduction to ballet, I'm kind of interested to hear how it all began. Obviously, a lot of little girls kind of start in like ballet school or like with their friends. How was your first introduction into ballet?
So my mum just took me to a local ballet class that was near us. We lived in London. I grew up in Islington. And yeah, it was just kind of baby ballet. And initially I absolutely hated it. I used to scream and hide under the piano. I'm pretty sure I gave my mum absolute grief. But and then after that, I kind of, so it, ballet in the beginning didn't really appeal to me very much other than music. So I used to, before school, this sounds extremely posh, but like my dad who's quite cultured, he used to like bring me down to the lounge and put on Stravinsky.
Oh wow, that is bougie. Then,
I know, very bougie. And I used to just jump around to try, you know, have you ever heard, you know, I'm sure you have, the Rite of Spring.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the very sort of percussion moments of the Rite of Spring, where, you know, you have to kind of, I tried as like a 2-year-old to try and jump on the beat of you know, when those notes were.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just loved it. I just loved the drama. So, yeah, that Amazing. Was, I guess that was my main introduction.
Yeah. And then like, when was that kind of step where you were like, this is it, I kind of want to make a career out of this?
Right. So, So fast forward a little bit, and I was taking Saturday classes with this teacher to a, you know, a good level. And, but I was, you know, extremely kind of young, and my technique was just all over the place. I didn't really know what serious ballet was. And then I was introduced to this Russian teacher that this, my current teacher, introduced me to, and she gave me a private lesson. And this was a studio in her garage at the back of her house. And she was kind of shouting at me and slapping my feet and saying, point your feet harder, harder, harder. And I was just like, God, what is this? What's going on? And she was, you know, I cried almost instantly. I was like, I don't like it. And then after, let's say, like 2 weeks, I said to my mom, like, oh, I'd kind of like to see that lady again. And then God knows what possessed me. And then after that, I just kind of, I kind of didn't exactly have a point in time where I thought I want to be a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
But it kind of, I kind of got obsessed with the hard work. And then obviously, as I was with a Russian coach, I then became very familiar with
hard work.
Yeah, hard work and the Vaganova technique. And then the Vaganova school. And then obviously then I'd watched a lot of ballet and decided that was what I wanted to do. So
it's interesting that you say that kind of hard work, that grit, because I think for so many people it was the softness and the delicacy of ballet that, like, you know, you're drawn to when you're younger, the kind of good toes, naughty toes, the like plush tutus and satin. But actually, yeah, it's really interesting that maybe it was that kind of the challenge and the ruthlessness of that Russian technique that drew it to you.
Well, I think I'm quite competitive and quite stubborn with myself. So when I was like working hard and finding that I wasn't good at something, I absolutely hated that feeling. I was like, no, I need to be the best at this.
That's all like too common, isn't it? So many dancers have that just grit to be better and to like improve themselves. It really is so linked to us.
Yeah, I mean, obviously then, like, you know, you learn the art form and that's what differentiates it from, say, a sport. Yes. But I definitely had that kind of athletic mentality of you know, competitiveness and wanting to be the best and just, you know, enjoying the hard work. But then equally, you do kind of fall in love with music. I've always adored classical music, and it was just like the idea of, you know, sort of expressing myself through movement in a beautiful way, with a lot of hard work in brackets, but was just kind of fascinating to me.
That's such a lovely summary. You're right. It is. I think the music can be such the root of all of it for a lot of people. And yeah, you're right. I think with the added, you know, seasoning of hard work and everything else, it does form something quite beautiful. When you kind of made the step to, you know, move over to Russia, tell me how that came about, because I'm so fascinated by this. And I think it says a lot about you and your bravery. It's an incredibly courageous thing you did so young, but also a lot about what you weren't getting here in the UK.
Yeah. So I was obviously being coached by this Russian teacher in London. And at the time I was also at Tring and I loved Tring, but the ballet wasn't good enough there, obviously. It's a much more sort of broad school. They're fantastic at musical theatre, but the ballet at that time anyway was a little bit lacking for me, and the teacher there said I should try for the Royal Ballet School.
Yeah.
So then I went to the Royal Ballet School, White Lodge. I didn't get in the first time, I got in the second time. The first time I didn't get in because I forgot my toe pads for my point shoes.
Oh, so brutal.
Yeah, Gaylene Stock at the time was there, and she kind of was cringing at my wincing as I rose onto point.
Oh, God, bless you for crying anyway, though. That is
Yeah. Brave. So the next year I got in, and I stayed there for 3 years, and I didn't have time as much time to see my Russian coach, but in the holidays... they didn't know about this obviously, but I would visit the Vaganova Academy.
Oh, wow.
So I went when I was 13 to begin with my friend, and just kind of went to the school, watched classes. I think I did an audition at that time too, or at least had the director, who was Altanai Silmaratova, very famous legendary ballerina, have a look at me. And I had to do, I remember it vividly, I just had to do a grand plié in second and then an arabesque. And I remember thinking the floor was so sloped in the studio. I was like, you know, 13, this kind of gangly body. I was just like, this is so difficult to balance.
That is pretty exposing though, to be fair. Grand plié and arabesque. That's
quite
mean.
It was basically just like, I know, it was just like turnout and extensions. Yeah. But she was like, yeah, good potential. I guess she's too young right now to come here, like come back in a bit. And I was like, okay. So then when I came, I visited again when I was 15. So now in England, this was at the point when we were auditioning for the upper school. And it was that year I thought to myself, you know, something in me told me this wasn't totally the path that I was supposed to be on. And that this school wasn't for me because, you know, I didn't mature as much physically as the other girls did, because I grew so much. I'm tall. I'm like 5'9". Yeah. And I grew a lot in the last 2 years at the Royal Ballet School. And I was, you know, weak and struggling, and I didn't have the kind of nurturing that my growing body needed and the strength building that it obviously needed. And obviously it worked for some people, but didn't work for me. And so I was kind of, you know, desperate to go to the Vaganova. I thought, you know, when I was there, I thought this is the place that I think I should go. So when I went back to audition, I took class And I was taking class with, you know, some now very famous ballerinas. So, and I was always in awe of them. I thought they were amazing. I was just like, I want to be like these people. I want to be like them. Yeah. And I went to the office afterwards, and the director, the main director of the school, who was this large lady, she said, like, you know, you're too young, you know, foreigners get injured here. We don't want you coming too young. We don't want you to get injured. I said, please, please let me come. I'm not going to get injured. I really want to come. Basically begged. And gosh, then she was just like, okay.
That's amazing.
And I was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, thank you. And then as I was leaving the office, she went, one more thing. And then she went, don't get fat.
I love that. Oh my God. You should just get that on like a mug. One more thing, don't get fat.
It was just quite funny. It was just quite funny because she was extremely large. She was studying me, and I was tiny. I was like 15.
You just like, you can't write that. Like, that's just bang on, like, the what you think would happen. I love it. It's so good. And like, I just can't, like, that is so unusual. I don't think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, barely anyone does that. You know, you're part of one of the most like prestigious establishments in the UK, you know, in the world for ballet, the Royal Ballet School, and to have left for a much harsher, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know, way of life, schooling, everything is amazing. And I, honest to God, I am in awe of you. That sounds incredibly courageous. What, where did you find that strength to do that and kind of take that leap of faith?
Well, I was terrified, don't get me wrong. Like, on the flight there, I think I cried the entire time. My mum was trying to interview me because she's a journalist, and she was trying to like do a video diary, and she was like, Izzy, tell the camera how you're feeling. I was like, I can't put it away.
They don't want to know.
To be honest, like, I was like, you know, I was very to and from staying. I knew I wasn't happy at the Royal Ballet School. I knew I wasn't getting the attention that I wanted. Like, they were focused on some other people, and I was worried about it. I was worried about going to the Royal Ballet School and being, you know, not getting the attention I needed, not becoming the best I wanted to be or deserved to be after all these years. Like, I felt like these were imperative years of training, and I needed to make the best decision here. So I thought to myself, you know, I'll go to Vaganova, you know, if I hate it, if I despise it, if I can't bear being there, I'll just come back and go back to the Royal Ballet School. Like, in my head, I said to myself, okay, I'll stay a year at the Vaganova and then go back to the upper school. That was my plan. I just wanted to like try it out. But I ended up absolutely falling in love with it and just like staying in that school 4 years, like till the end. So it was just like, obviously very different.
That's so interesting, that kind of like the wisdom and that kind of foresight you had there to be so conscientious to know that those are important years and you really had to make the best decision for you. And I can only imagine, you know, like the Royal Ballet School is a sea of you know, to be principal dancers, and it must be quite, you know, you're right to kind of have that concern about, am I going to get the attention, because everyone there is so good. And I'm sure you were too, but you know, to have had that thought of actually, am I going to reach my full potential, is incredibly wise. And you would have only been, you know, what, 15 or 16? It's amazing.
Yeah, just something in me, I just kind of listened to my heart at that point, you know.
That's amazing.
I was scared though. I'm not.
Yeah. And when you got there, was it almost instantaneous? Did you feel like you fitted in? It was the right decision, or what? You know, I imagine maybe it probably had more tears. But how did you handle that?
It was a bit weird. It was a bit weird. Like, my mum stayed for like a week, and you know, I would do the school and then go see her in the hotel and spend the day with her, because I'm extremely close with my mum.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, she's taken how many hours has she driven me to ballet lessons?
Yeah.
It's like you have relationship.
So many dancers exactly have that relationship with their mums. They really are the like first set of cheerleaders.
My mum is amazing. She used to drive me, because we lived in the country, and she used to drive me from Buckinghamshire to Richmond, to White Lodge, for 8:30 in the morning. And we used to have to avoid school traffic. So we had to leave. We left at like 5:30 every morning.
God, dedication.
I know. of my mum as well. But anyway, so yes, she stayed for about a week, and then obviously it was time for her to go. And bit of backstory with me, I never did well with boarding at the Royal Ballet School. Like, I really didn't enjoy it, mainly because the atmosphere for me wasn't great there. I didn't really get on with I didn't have a load of close friends there. So I was worried about being away from home and boarding in this school where they speak a different language, where my mum's thousands of miles away. But what was different there in that scenario was my mum was so far away.
Yeah.
That I couldn't really worry about it. It was just like, she's so far away, I just need to get on with it. And it's weird. I felt so at home. And I got the people there. We had a small group of foreigners at the time. It has changed a lot since I was there, but there was only a small group of us. There was me, who was English. There was my friend Keenan Camper, who was a couple of years older than me, and another dancer who's American called Haley. And then we had a nice Belgian guy who was part of our little group, and then a couple of Europeans, and then on the floor above us were the Japanese students who adore Russian ballet. So there was quite a few Japanese, and so I built a close relationship with them, and they're some of my closest friends to the day, even though we're all over different sides of the world. And I just kind of adapted, and the work of the school took over.
Yeah.
So I just kind of got on with it,
It's that fight or flight. And it's amazing that, when it does kick into gear, when you are in the right place and that is exactly what you want.
Yeah. And I just thought to myself, this training is absolutely insanely amazing. I can't spend every day worrying or getting homesick here. So I didn't really. And it was kind of, I would always feel homesick initially when my mum left, for the afternoon, and be like, oh, she's gone again. But then it's fine.
Yeah. And when you're first at the school and that sort of training, again, I have no idea. I only have the sort of snippets that you see on Instagram and these random tales that kind of feed through the ballet circles. But what were the main differences you felt between your training in England and your training in Russia?
Yeah, that's a good question. Mainly, I'd say attention to detail was a massive one. And just kind of, so basically, I was there 4 years, and the first 2 years were extremely difficult at the Vaganova, extremely. I thought, wow, I haven't known ballet before this. It was everything in Russia is more, everything. Okay. More turnout, higher legs, bigger back bends, higher jumps. More pirouettes, everything. So I was the first couple of months, I don't think I stopped sweating. Gosh. And then, and also it's just that thing of, if somebody doesn't get something right, especially, the girls they're focusing on, which in Russia is usually the girls standing on the back bar. If you know anything about the Vaganova Academy, or the Vaganova system, there's basically, let's say, three parts to a square, so the two sides and the line at the back, and the people on the back bar, so who are facing the mirror, are the main dancers of that class.
God, I had no idea.
So if you watch Vaganova exams, the people on the back bar underneath Vaganova's portrait, those are the best ones and the main ones that everyone's
That's amazing. I love it. That's what makes sense. You've ever seen those old videos of Svetlana, that she's always there. Oh my God, how funny. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's quite an accolade to be given those spots.
I bet. You did.
The first 2 years I was on the side.
Oh.
And then I worked my, butt off.
Yeah, you got yourself.
And then we had a different teacher the last 2 years, and the first day of the last 2 years, she looks at me, and I'm standing on the sidebar, and she just points to the center and looks at me and says, go stand over there. Wow. And I was just like, what? Yeah. And it was like I was joining a party of people I hadn't been invited to before. It was just weird. I was like, okay.
Yeah, but it must have meant so much to you as well. Yeah, like having worked so hard for the 2 years to have been like, oh my God, it's paid off.
Well, yeah, it was kind of like though I've been given the spot. Now I need to earn the right to stay here.
Yeah. Bar's being raised.
No pun intended.
very good. No, that's so interesting.
I love the pun.
And it must be so interesting for you now, kind of coming back into London. And like, obviously, I'm interested to ask about that kind of move when you were ready to, but more so that now you're teaching in London. Do you find yourself teaching in a different way to like the other teachers at Danceworks, Pineapple, whatever? Do you find yourself bringing some things back from Russia with you?
Oh, a thousand percent.
Really?
I mean, I totally think of myself as a Vaganova trained dancer now. Like I don't even remember like how I was, like the details of the Royal Ballet training. Like I spent so long kind of changing myself. Like they spent a good 2 years like changing me.
Yeah. Bashing it out of you.
Yeah. Bashing it out. So I was like, okay. Yeah. But I thank them for that because I just became for me the best I could be, you know. It was also just the way they taught that was so special. And their attention to detail. So now I don't necessarily compare myself to other Danceworks teachers because like they're all different and people like everyone for different ways, but I totally teach the way like I was taught and the way, but I also add my own kind of, obviously my own personality and thought process to it, because I do think the way you teach is very important. And it's also like how you speak to your students and how you understand them as individuals is very important, you know.
Yeah,
they're all different.
No, definitely. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting. There's definitely like a wave of younger coaches and younger teachers at the moment. And it's something I think is really, really encouraging for the dance world, because for so long it's kind of been, if you weren't a principal or you weren't the prima ballerina, you didn't have the right to teach. But actually, like, being a great dancer doesn't necessarily make you a great teacher. And actually the skill to translate and transfer your skills onto someone else who isn't like you is, you know, far higher and far, you know, more skillful, can't think of another word, then, you know, then it seems. And I think it's really good that there are these younger teachers who can feed through from the industry not that long ago. Like, you were just in it rather than you were in it 20 years ago. It really is. I think it's just bringing down that feedback loop is getting smaller and smaller, and then people entering the dance world have a better chance because they're just, you know, they're fed with more current and in-date information.
Yeah, and I think young people especially, they, well, actually, you know, a lot of people, they get very inspired by learning from someone who, you know, obviously I worked so hard to get to a really high level technically. And then it's also just like they get inspired because I can still do everything to a high level. So you can demonstrate and you can show them what it can be like if they work hard. They feel motivated, a lot more motivated to kind of prove themselves, work hard, you know, listen. Then, you know, it's I think it's important that you can still demonstrate to young people so that they can, you know, understand. So yeah, there is definitely a wave of younger dancers and I mean younger coaches doing things. And
how were you ready to kind of come back to London? Like, you know, you, like I said before, you've done something that not many people did do or do, which is, you know, leave the British systems to go somewhere else. So when you were ready to come back to London, how did that decision come to you?
Well, I'd done 4 years at the school and graduated. And then I was working in Russia for a while. So I went to the Mikhailovsky Ballet. And then you know, my teacher desperately wanted me to go to the Marinsky, but and in my head that was the goal, and it would have happened, but there were a few politics at the time, so it didn't. So it was a bit disappointing. So I went to the Mikhailovsky though, which was brilliant. And they actually wanted me to go there 2 years before I graduated. I said I just said no. I've got too much work to do. And then I after that, I made a move to a different company, Eifmann Ballet, which is also in St. Petersburg, but it's a bit more neoclassical. And a lot of tall dancers there, and I just felt like doing something a bit different. And then after that, I just, I'd been in Russia for like 7 years, maybe slightly longer. And that's the longest I've stayed somewhere. Like I've always had a sort of sense of, don't know, like wanting to do something different, hence why I've, you know, I've changed schools 3 times. But it's just like, I obviously felt most at home in Russia. But then it got to a point where I was feeling a little bit down. I was feeling like I need a change. I'm not totally happy here anymore. And I also felt I was reaching the age, like I was in my mid-20s now, like I didn't really want to settle here. I wanted to be closer to home. I wanted to develop just to see what would happen in London. And I just felt an urgency to do something different and to slightly be my own agent for a while. I did think about going into different companies, but something always in my head said to me, you know, I don't know if I want that anymore. So it was quite difficult though, obviously, in my mind, because I'd had, you know, I guess a plan in my head for since I was like 10. So the idea of then doing stuff on my own took a long time to kind of accept. But I started to get opportunities, like free, like little contracts here and there, dancing at the opera house, like in the various operas and things as their ballerina, and then doing various projects. And then I started teaching people and noticing I was actually quite good at it. And then, you know, they were really enjoying it. So that was developing. And, you know, this was, you know, I don't know how many, like maybe 3 years ago now. And I now developed like quite a relationship with a lot of people, and things are just growing very nicely for me. So I do feel like things happen for a reason. I'd also experienced a very bad injury once I left Russia, which I recovered from, but it took a lot out of me, and it took a year to get over. It also, you know, made me want to be somewhere where there was slightly better healthcare and physio, because it's quite old fashioned there.
Oh, really?
And things like that. Yeah, it was always quite difficult. They have got amazing massage therapists. Like, I've never found anyone better. in terms of like, physio and keeping yourself healthy in general, it's a little more challenging over there.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And again, you're clearly a very brave and courageous person, because all these things you've continued to kind of have ownership of your art. And I really think that's an interesting thing, and you've done so well to keep that. And I definitely felt like when I left school, I didn't own my art. I didn't own myself as a product. I think in these schools, you become so, you're just trying so hard to please your teacher or your director or your principal, like whoever is, you know, in front of you. And then when you're in the big wide world, it's sort of like, well, who do I please now? And it does take a while to kind of be like, it's you. You have to please yourself. Like, you're your own like boss now. And it's amazing that you kind of at that young age were like, no, this isn't right for me. I'm going to change that. And, you know, when you were at the school and moving into the company and then moving back to London, that you were like, actually, I'm going to take control. I'm going to make myself my own boss. And I think more people should be like that. More people should have that mentality.
Well, I think, do you know what's really like challenging for people to accept is that just because, say, you don't have the same path or the path that people think is a successful one, such as being in a company, because so many people see that as the only way to succeed. And, you know, say you've trained all your life in ballet school and then you go to a company and that's the path. You go to a company, you stay there for however many years and then you retire. And it's just like more and more I find young people are wanting to be a little bit more freelance. Like some people, you know, we're doing like 3-month contracts and then a bit of a break, doing our own side projects and our own other passions.
Yeah.
And it's just like there's a lot more freedom to it. Yes, it's more unstable, but you can create a really good life for yourself with connections, meeting so many different people, and it's getting over the stigma of there's only one way to do it. you know. And I think obviously I do believe that every ballet student, I do believe, should have the professional experience of being in a company. I don't think you can, you know, get away with that. I think you do need that experience. You need to develop your skills on stage, develop your art form. I don't think you can call yourself a complete professional if you've never been in a company scenario or worked on a professional stage. You know, like, you do need that, but staying there forever until you retire, it's not necessarily the only way.
You know? It is, and there's just so many avenues now, and as we're all becoming far more like versatile, we have the option to define our own success. It's not the same for everyone, and like you said, like, it doesn't, your path is doesn't have to be the same as everyone else's. And actually being like, this success for me is having 3 months jobs, you know, every year, and having the rest of the year to do your own thing, like, do whatever you want. And I think it's more encouraging to see people like you who have done that and are here to say, I've had a great career, I'm happy, and, you know, I'm alive.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, initially it's obviously really scary. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know anyone. You're starting from scratch. Like, it's a social, it's like a networking business. Yeah. Like, you need to meet people, you know, be good with people, be able to connect, be able to make good working relationships, and just kind of, you know, slowly, slowly you build and build and build. So I said yes initially. I said yes to so many different experiences because I thought, you never know what they're going to lead to. Mm. Like, for example, I said yes to like teaching at this yoga studio, this like beginner's ballet class. And I was like, this is a really nice studio in Richmond. I was like, okay, sure.
Yes.
So I go, and there's this like really cool creative director there for this like music video that she's doing, and she sees me, and she kind of like, you know, we gel and she likes me. Then 2 weeks later I run into her in a studio, a ballet studio in Islington, and I was just like, oh, hi. And she's like, hi, we're just, you know, we've just been auditioning for this music video, but we need one more person, do you want to do it? I was like, yeah,
amazing. Yeah,
just kind of, you know, it's just kind of interesting how it's that go with the flow thing again. Just kind of see what happens.
Yeah, and that's how, you know, you make your own luck. Exactly, like saying yes, being open to the opportunities. Like, you can build yourself more, like, chances for good stuff to happen the more you open yourself up.
Exactly, it's saying yes. It's kind of understanding there's no such thing as kind of, you know, there's at the right time. Like, you know, if there's an opportunity there, take it.
Yeah.
Like, don't waste time. And also, it's about making your own opportunities. So if you have an idea, if you have, you know, this goal of yours that you want to achieve, whether it's, you know, a business venture, or you want to put something on a stage or whatever, go for it. Like, you know, the sky's the limit. Just kind of hold yourself back.
Yeah, I love that. And you're just definitely the result of telling that to yourself. I'm kind
Hopefully.
Of, you are definitely. I'm interested as well. I'm a tool dancer, and the company I work at now is like my haven, because we're all tool dancers. We had to be over 175 centimeters to even audition. So
are
it
you
really
auditioning?
Is. No, it's a real little sanctuary for all these tool dancers that have probably been pushed out of far too many auditions early because of being too tall. But for you, how did your acceptance with your height kind of come about?
Oh God. Well, it was kind of, again, I was at the Royal Ballet School, and it was slightly traumatic, like, occasionally, because I'll never forget, these things just stick with you. I was obviously growing, and people around me were like 5'2" and they'd stop growing. And I was just like, okay, well, I have different genes, but whatever. And then I once, like, it was at the beginning of the year and we were being measured, you know, and like I'd grown, and then like, I think it was Kayleen Stock at the time. She kind of said to me, oh, you can stop now. Oh, you can stop growing now. And I was like, okay,
Yeah, sure thing. Because
I obviously have control.
Well, I'll write that on my to-do list. Yeah, must remember, stop growing. Thank you.
Must remember to stunt my growth.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So I was just like, I mean, you know, I was just like, obviously freaking out because I was so young. And I said to my mum, I can't grow anymore. What if I grow? I can't control it. And, you know, so obviously that made me quite insecure about my height for a while because I was just like, you know, I you know, so I never wore heels or anything. And then I went to the Veganova and I instantly also loved it for this reason. There was just so many different sizes of people, like, and a lot of tall girls, a lot. And I obviously was like in the tall group, but there was like a huge amount of tall dancers. And especially in the company, I used to go watch, and then we were allowed backstage, and I go backstage and look at their height, and they would walk past me and be the same. And I'd be like, oh, this is great. I don't have to worry about this anymore. I mean, all I need is a tall guy. I mean, and that's, there's so many tall men here. So it's like absolutely fine. And then I learned to, my teachers though were absolutely amazing there. They made me confident. Like, you know, they instilled a lot of confidence in me. And my teacher used to, again, this wouldn't happen, I don't think, in this country. Like, she used to ring me up most evenings on the phone and, you know, and say like, you're number one for me in the class. And be like, but today you were terrible. But then she'd be like, but, you know, this teacher thought you were good today, so well done. And then she'd be like, you need to have your nose in the air. And I'd be like, what do you mean? She's like, you know, nose in the air, a little bit snooty, a little bit more confident.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. It was quite like, oh, she didn't mean be arrogant. She just meant be more believing in yourself and more kind of know how good you are. Because obviously when you're young, and I didn't understand, I had a lot of doubt in my myself. And so I didn't, you know, which I regret now. I mean, it's so annoying. Like, you know, when you're young, you kind of really don't see what other people see. And so it took a long time to build my confidence, but slowly that grew. I embraced my height and learned to absolutely love it. And so, yeah, now, I mean, I don't have any kind of feelings towards it.
No, and it's that visualization, the same way you said with the fact that you're able-bodied to, when you're giving a class, to demonstrate, you know, you need that visualization, you need to see it. And like, I actually look back and I think I never had a teacher that was taller than me. I never had a teacher that was my height. And like, again, I'm so lucky we're in these British schools where like they do, the teachers were wonderful and excellent and I'm so grateful for their teaching, but they weren't like me and they never were going to be. And
the
minute someone actually encouraged me for being like, oh, but you're tall, that will work, we can sell that, I was suddenly like, oh, okay, like, thank you. Like, that actually is just that little bit of believing in yourself. And yeah, again, the company I'm in now, I remember the first time I auditioned and like finally almost seeing it and being like, oh, this is why I get chucked out of auditions, because this is what it's like to fit in. And I never ever fitted in.
So no,
it is interesting when you fit in, you do feel like it makes sense. You know, we are tall, it works, but you know, it's just, it takes a while.
Yeah, it's also that thing though, you know, subconsciously that kind of message to you, like, you're taller than your teachers, your classmates are all smaller. It's just like, you kind of feel different, but you're not sure why.
Yeah.
And like, you don't know why. And is it wrong? Is it okay to be different? All these things. And it's just like, I also try to instill in people, you know, that it's completely okay to be your unique self. Yeah. It's so easy, I find, with like social media now, that people compare themselves so dramatically. Like, I don't look like that. I don't have that arch. My leg isn't by my ear. And it's like, you know, just focus on yourself. Focus on your journey, what you want. You want to get your legs higher, then, you know, you can stretch. You can do that. Don't take it as a personal kind of defeatist mindset of, I'll never be like that. It's like, no, you can work on it and work on it for yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very important we all kind of remember we're all on this journey of life on our own and working towards whatever we want, you know.
Yeah. And I think that, again, is now that you're teaching, I think that's such a good message, and to that I'm really glad is kind of coming forward. And I think obviously, like, our teachers didn't grow up with social media, but when we teach, we know what it's like to exactly have 10 million girls in your phone that all look better than you, are all better at pirouettes or développés or whatever it is. And you can, it's so natural that you feel like shit. You're just like, well, obviously I'm not good because I'm not like her, but there's always so much more that goes into it. And you're right, just remembering like, that's fine, but you have this, or that's fine, but you can become that, you know. It's just that encouragement and acceptance, I think, is definitely,
I know,
you should carry on.
I think it's so important. I get quite a lot of like, you know, messages from like, you know, young girls, like 15-year-old girls who are completely kind of defeated and very upset that they're not, you know, where they want to be or where they think they should be because some 11-year-old's doing 10 pirouettes somewhere.
It's always going to be that 11-year-old. There's always going to be that one in like toddler who's on like a balance ball in point shoes.
But like, you know, I say she might quit at 15. Who cares? Like, just do it. Do it. Just carry on yourself.
Yeah. No, you're dead on. No, that's so lovely. Thank you so much for chatting to me today. Honestly, you've got such an unusual perspective.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I'd been lovely chatting with you.